tribal leaders and conservationists issue an international plea to fight President Trump's plans for a border wall. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio, and this is Fronteras, a public radio show about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. The Center for Biological Diversity, Greenpeace Mexico, and the Tohono O'odham tribe in the Mexican state of Sonora filed a joint petition this week with the UNESCO World Heritage Commission. The group says a 30-foot wall would prevent endangered wildlife migration across the border, threatening survival of the jaguar and other species. It wants in danger status granted for the El Pinacate and Gran Desierto de Altar Biosphere Reserve, a Mexican World Heritage Site. The Center for Biological Diversity also recently filed a suit asking the federal government to investigate the wall's environmental impact. KUNM's Chris Boros spoke with the center's Randy Seraglio.
So federal law requires that the environmental impacts of any major federal project or action should be taken into consideration. So what does the Trump administration have to do before building the wall?
Well, the lawsuit is filed under the National Environmental Policy Act, and that is very much a look before you leap law. So the government is required to analyze the environmental impacts of this proposal before it's implemented.
And researchers have found that construction of security barriers along the border have a negative impact on animal species living there. What species are we talking about, and how could they be affected by the wall?
Well, the impacts of border security policy are so broad and so deep that our lawsuit is actually very broad. It's calling for a comprehensive analysis. There's more than 100 different species in the border region that would be harmed, many of which are threatened and endangered. They're protected under the Endangered Species Act. So some of the biggest ones are jaguar and ocelot. We have a resurgence of jaguars in southern Arizona. So those animals, if they are going to recover from threatened and endangered status, need to be able to expand into territories and home ranges in the U.S.
But it's not only about the wall, though, right? It also has to do with road construction, installation of lighting. What else?
You know, a lot of people don't realize that our border security policy is full-on militarization. I mean, there's forward operating bases, there's high-tech communications towers and surveillance installations out there in the border region. The amount of activity out there is just incredible already. The damage is just going to increase exponentially. All of those impacts need to be analyzed legally. We need a sound scientific analysis of, you know, what are the impacts on all these different species? What is this going to do to the border ecology? And what is it going to do to border communities? You know, how will this affect people who live in the border?
How long do you think it'll take before you hear back about the lawsuit?
Well, the gears of justice are grinding already. We have received an assignment of a federal judge, and the legal process will play out. It will take some time to do that. And, of course, such an environmental impact statement, as broad and deep as the impacts are, will take some years to play out as well.
So how can we protect the U.S. border with Mexico, though, in a way that doesn't interfere with the ecosystems there?
Well, what a lot of people don't realize is that the border now is more secure by far than it's ever been in our nation's history. And, in fact, border communities are some of the safest communities in the United States. El Paso, for instance, consistently ranks at the top in terms of the lowest level of violent crime. It's a complete mischaracterization to look at the southern border and say that it's somehow under siege from Mexico. You know, Mexico is one of our biggest trading partners, and the border region itself is very much culturally and economically interconnected with Mexico. You know, border militarization and border walls, they harm that dynamic. They divide families, they hurt economies, and of course, they've chased thousands of people out into the desert where they've died in harsh conditions. And I think it's pretty clear that the enforcement-only strategy that we've taken to immigration in the last couple of decades is really not working.
That was KUNM's Chris Boros speaking with Randy Seraglio of the Center for Biological Diversity. 3 months ago, after attending a routine immigration check-in, a Houston-area father was suddenly detained and deported. Houston Public Media's Allison Lee reports on how the family of Jose Escobar is coping.
Since President Trump assumed office, his administration has tried to make changes. One of them, immigration enforcement. Nationwide, deportations of immigrants without a criminal record went up over 10% within the first 3 months of 2017, according to federal data. But here in the southern region of Texas, arrests of immigrants with no criminal record have more than doubled. One of those deported is the husband of Rose Escobar.
I am a U.S. citizen, and I'm being hurt by my own president.
That was Rose at a news conference in March. She was speaking out against the sudden deportation of her husband, Jose. Under the Obama administration, he'd been given a temporary deportation reprieve. He was required to check in annually with the immigration office. But earlier this year, when he went to the office as required, he was detained and never came home. He was deported 2 weeks later. And now, 3 months later, I got a hold of his wife at their home in Pearland.
One second, honey. I know.
She's juggling the phone while tending to their 2-year-old daughter. They also have a 7-year-old son. Rose Escobar told me how things unfolded that day, 3 months ago.
Our appointment was at 9, and the guy, instead of signing off his sheet, told us to go to the back, which they never do.
Jose was arrested on the spot.
I said, what are you guys doing? And they said, well, ma'am, you know, with the new administration. And I said, no, your president is asking for criminals. My husband's not a criminal. Look at his record. He's not a criminal.
The new administration changed some of ICE's previous priority guidelines.
There were kind of categories of folks who were more or less off limits. Now all that has been lifted.
That's Brett Bradford, the Houston ICE Director of Field Enforcement and Removal. He couldn't address Jose's specific case, but says more people will fall into their priorities.
I would say the biggest difference to me, under the previous administration, we had policies that kind of restricted who we could take enforcement action on. There will certainly be more people that will take enforcement action on because more people fall into that pool of folks that we can. And really, I think it's probably a more fair and unbiased approach right now. What we've been told by this administration is just enforce the law.
Rose Escobar doesn't think what happened to her husband was fair. But here is what we know about what happened. Jose came to Houston when he was 15, fleeing a devastating earthquake and rampant gang activity in El Salvador. He and his mother were given a temporary protected status. He eventually lost that status. His family blames it on a paperwork mistake. Jose eventually became a supervisor for a painting company. He has no criminal record, and immigration officials tell us they've tried to deport him repeatedly over the last 10 years. Then in 2012, the Houston ICE office granted him something called an order of supervision, which the family thought meant he was safe from deportation. Then suddenly came his detention 3 months ago. He was sent to a detention center near Bush Airport. 2 weeks later, Rose says her cell rang with a number she didn't recognize. It was Jose.
He goes, they deported me last night, honey.
She said he was calling from El Salvador with only $20 in his pocket. She's worried. El Salvador is a country so dangerous, the State Department warns U.S. citizens to be aware it has one of the highest violent crime rates in the world. Jose's only job prospect so far is with a call center over 2 hours away, where he'd only earn $10 a day.
My family is broken, and it's not because my husband's a criminal. It's just because he was thrown into a statistics where they're making him seem like he is a criminal. And it's been hard. Really hard. We're trying our best to just make sure my kids don't forget who he is.
The Escobars have hired a lawyer and are getting help from Houston Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee. In the meantime, Rose is trying to arrange for the kids to visit their father in El Salvador.
That was Allison Lee with Houston Public Media reporting. Math is a universal language, but for English learners, math textbooks and standardized tests aren't so universal. Megan Burks of KPBS reports San Diego teachers are removing language barriers so students who haven't mastered English can still advance in math.
Mariana Moncrief is a math teacher now, but when she started college in the United States, she was put in a remedial math course.
Even though I did understand the math, I could not pass the test because I didn't know what the questions were.
Born in Slovakia, now she's teaching students from all over the world at Hoover High School in City Heights. About 30% of the student body there is learning to speak English. Another 50%, like Moncrief, speak it as a second language. Also like Moncrief, a lot of them are pretty good at math.
I ask my students first to come to the board and show me how they do it in their country. And most of the time, it's exactly how I learn in Slovakia. I just kind of get very excited about it because I can support them. I know they're not doing anything wrong.
This year, Moncrief and some of her colleagues are meeting after school each week to pore over worksheets and tests. They're dissecting the language both they and their students used in questions and answers. The goal is to find and fix the things that might land English learners in a remedial math class they don't need.
Like, for example, this one, it says, what does the graph show?
Today it's a word problem on slope. A steep line shows miles traveled by bike. Students were asked...
It says, what does the graph show?
Today it's a word problem...
For example...
Learners in a remedial math class they don't need.
Like, for example, this one... It says, what does the graph show?
Today it's a word problem on slope. A steep line shows miles traveled by bike. Students were asked what it means when that line flattens out.
Here he says, they are going same miles. As I said, those students cannot express themselves in English very clearly. Mm-hmm. So just like that one sentence tells me a lot. When he says same miles, he kind of recognized that around this time, we are still at the 20-mile mark. Mm-hmm.
Moncrief may understand the answer, but Bill Zahner, who's leading the effort, points out it might not be good enough on a standardized test.
Think about these answers as giving you insights into what students know, and then building on that, saying, going the same miles. I think what you mean is the distance is not changing.
Yeah.
There's this idea of giving the students both the credit for coming up with this mathematical explanation and giving them the words, right, to express that in a way that would get them credit on another test.
Zahner is an assistant professor at San Diego State and is researching the intersection of language and mathematics with a grant from the National Science Foundation.
We think that mathematics is a universal language, right? 1 + 1 = 2. It doesn't matter where you are. But as soon as you ask someone to explain or to justify, now you've put a linguistic demand on that mathematics.
Zahner goes back to the graph, that one with the flat line meaning the cyclist took a break.
One of the questions was, you know, what happened between 11:30 and 12? And there's a horizontal line. And a lot of the students said they stopped for lunch. And then there was explain. And the word explain, I think, was implying, give me a mathematical explanation in terms of the graph that you're looking at. And a number of students wrote, well, usually you eat lunch at 11:30. And it's an example of an accurate answer, but not the one that was intended.
Zahner and San Diego teachers will spend the next 4 years finding these overlooked pitfalls. They'll discuss how to overcome them and then present their findings to educators and textbook publishers statewide. Zahner is careful to say the effort isn't about watering down the math. He says often the fix might just be a discussion in class, not a rewrite.
I think there's a big debate. Do you try to take all the language out or reduce the language demands? And the example I always think of is like IKEA directions. There's no language in IKEA directions, except if you look in the IKEA booklet on the very first page, if you get confused, you're supposed to call them, which I think tells me that when there's something complex happening, you need to talk about it.
Math teacher Moncrief says talking about it with Zahner and her colleagues has already helped her tap into the talents of her English learners.
My students come to class and they want to work. I have not had class where my students would come and not have homework. They do homework, they ask me questions. It's wonderful.
Countywide, there are more than 100,000 English learners who, like Moncrief, just might be math teachers in the making. For Fronteras, I'm Megan Burks.
Coming up on Fronteras, a South Texas barrio-friendly twist on NPR's popular show, A Prairie Home Companion.
We're touching on a little bit of Trumpito, which is Doña Cuca's pet armadillo.
That story and chatbots for help, coming up after this. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to Fronteras. What if your phone can help you quit smoking or lose weight? That's the idea behind a new chatbot texting service created by San Antonio medical professionals and engineers. Bioscience Medicine reporter Wendy Rigby outlines a new bilingual way to use your mobile device to improve your health.
Quitting smoking is the best and most life-saving decision that you can make.
That's the greeting from a new automated messaging system called QuitText, a program developed by UT Health San Antonio and University of Texas at San Antonio engineers to help smokers kick the habit.
The chatbot is quite, let's say, intelligent to talk to human. It's gradually evolving to become a sort of human.
That's UTSA electrical and computer engineer David Akopian. He explains a chatbot is a computer program that conducts a conversation with you, in this case by text on your phone. So it's not a real person at the other end, but questions and answers are programmed by health professionals. The biggest challenge with chatbots, according to postdoctoral student Sahak Kahyon, is setting up those multi-stage conversations that may go on for months at a time to help someone quit smoking.
You need to be able to follow up the next questions or next answers.
Kahyon says QuitText is bilingual, able to ask and answer in English or Spanish.
We decided why not to start with the Spanish and later on maybe extend this to other languages, French, German, Russian.
It's a health tool many younger people will embrace, according to engineering doctoral student Devasina Inabukatika.
It's a cool technology because young people usually go for cool things, which is very fast and immediately they'll get the results.
While the chatbot to help smokers quit is up and running, engineers are working on other health applications for this technology, like one specifically for breast cancer patients. The program answers questions like a virtual nurse, says master student Chetan Basitkar.
If they're having some issues, instead of going all the way to the clinic or hospital, they can just open up their app and then see if that can help them.
This project was funded by the Cancer Prevention and Research Institute of Texas, part of $3 billion Texas voters approved in 2007. David Akopian says so far, more than 2,000 people have signed up for QuitText at no cost.
It is free, and we are planning to keep it that way.
And the professor believes thousands of the 3 million smokers in Texas could quit by using this guided communication. To enroll, all you have to do is text "I quit" to 57682. Wendy Rigby, Texas Public Radio News.
Public radio fans are familiar with A Prairie Home Companion, the weekly variety show made popular by Garrison Keillor with skits, musical guests, and fake ads. It has a very Midwestern sensibility. Now take that concept and give it a South Texas twist. What you get is a barriologically correct version that recently hit the stage in San Antonio.
Welcome, everyone, to the Lalo Cavazos Show on Radio Atlan San Antonio. Y aquí, como siempre, la estrella del barrio, Lalo Cavazos.
It's called Radio Aztlán San Anto. It was created by the jazz poets of San Antonio about 7 years ago and is being performed at Urban 15, a performance space in South San Antonio. Like its public radio influence, Radio Aztlán San Anto presents comedy sketches and radio dramas. The actors sit at a long table with their scripts and microphones in front of them. Actor Eduardo Cavazos Garza is the founder and director of the Jazz Poets. Cavazos plays one of the onstage actors. He's joined by Dee Lusk, Silvia Garza, and Kiki Naranjo. Bargain sound effects are made possible with a wooden Dutch shoe, a bag of what appears to be sand, and a crinkled piece of paper. Cavazos says there are 4 shows in the Radio Aztlán canon, 2 of which are being presented at this performance.
I play Lalo Cavazos, the announcer and the MC for Radio Aztlán San Anto and the Lalo Cavazos show. We're interviewing some people about a new massive, massive brown hole recently discovered out there in our galaxy.
Ladies and gentlemen, in addition to antimatter and dark matter, radio scientists have discovered a new substance called doesn't matter.
That's right, Ed. It seems that doesn't matter has been confirmed to be the prominent component of a massive brown hole.
We're touching on a little bit of Trumpito, which is Doña Cuca's pet armadillo.
Man, did you see that? Oh, man, what the? It's an armadillo.
Is that Trumpito? Doña Cuca's pet armadillo?
How do we know? His head's all squished.
Look at the comb over at the end of his tail.
I don't know.
And it wouldn't be a Prairie Home takeoff without commercials.
This segment was sponsored by Resistencia Tortilla Factory, leaders in providing for all your decolonizational dietary needs. And folks, this just in. President Donald Trump just tweeted that he greatly resents being portrayed as an armadillo on a radio show in San Antonio, Texas.
The musical portion of the show is courtesy of the Jazz Poets of San Antonio. Here's Cavazos.
We have four musicians that play the drums, and then we have Carl Rush, Captain Crush on bass, Sean Sitton on guitar, and Tom Emmerich on indigenous flute. And what we do is we figure out a groove, a time and meter, and a beat for each poem that the poets present.
Dear younger me, always still hopeful and wishing and thinking. I hope your smile still lights up at the moonlight.
Think of it as a prairie home compañero. A barriologically correct version for those of us listening in the barrio cosm. And that's it for Fronteras and our stories from the Southwest this week. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org. Alexis Yancey produced this broadcast. Shelley Koffler is our executive producer. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Thanks for joining us. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.